Intervention by Kelly Robson. Narrated by Morgan Hallett.
When I was 57, I did the unthinkable. I became a creche manager. On Luna, creche work kills your social capital, but I didn't care. Not at first. My longtime love had been crushed to death in a bot malfunction in Luna's main mulching plant. I was just trying to find a reason to keep breathing. I found a crusty centenarian who'd outlived most of her cohort and asked for her advice. She said there was no better medicine for grief than children. So I found a creche tucked away behind a water printing plant and signed on as a cuddler. That's where I caught the baby bug. When my friends found out, the norming started right away. "You're getting a little tubby there, Jules," Ivan would say, unzipping my jacket and reaching inside to pat my stomach. "Got a little parasite incubating?" I expected this kind of attitude from Ivan, ringleader, team captain, alpha of alphas. From him, I could laugh it off. But then my closest friends started in. Beryl's pretty face soured in disgust every time she saw me. "I can smell the freeloader on you," she'd say, pretending to see body fluids on my perfectly clean clothing. "Have the decency to shower and change after your shift." Even that wasn't so bad. But then Robin began avoiding me and ignoring my pings. We'd been each other's first lovers, best friends since forever, and suddenly I didn't exist. That's how extreme the prejudice is on Luna. Finally, on my birthday, they threw me a surprise party. Everyone wore diapers and crawled around in a violent mockery of childhood. When I complained, they accused me of being broody. I wish I could say I ignored their razzing, but my friends were my whole world. I dropped creche work. My secret plan was to leave Luna, find a hab where working with kids wasn't social death, but I kept putting it off. Then I blinked, and 10 years had passed. Enough delay. I jumped trains to Eros Station, engaged a recruiter, and was settling into my new life on Ricochet within a month. I never answered my friends' pings. As far as Ivan, Beryl, Robin, and the rest knew, I fell off the face of the moon. And that's the way I wanted it. Ricochet is one of the asteroid-based habs that travel the inner system using gravity assist to boost speed in tiny increments. As a wandering hab, we have no fixed astronomical events or planetary seasonality to mark the passage of time, so boosts are a big deal for us. The equivalent of New Year's on Earth, or the Sol Belt flare cycle. On our most recent encounter with Mars, my third and final creche, the Jewel Box, were 12 years old. We hadn't had a boost since the kids were 6, so my team and I worked hard to make it special, throwing parties, making presents, planning excursions. We even suited up and took the kids to the outside of our hab, exploring asteroid Iris's vast, pockmarked surface, roofed by nothing less than the universe itself, in all its spangled glory. We played around there until Mars climbed over the horizon and showed the Jewel Box its great face for the first time. So huge and close it seemed we could reach up into its milky skim of atmosphere. When the boost itself finally happened, we were all exhausted. All the kids and cuddlers lounged in the rumpus room, clipped into our safety harnesses, nestled on mats and cushions, or tucked into the wall netting. Yawning, droopy-eyed, even dozing. But when the hab began to shift underneath us, we all sprang alert. Trezor scooted to my side and ducked his head under my elbow. "You doing okay, buddy?" I asked him in a low voice. He nodded. I kissed the top of his head and checked his harness. I wasn't the only adult with a little primate soaking up my body heat. Diamant used Blanche like a climbing frame, standing on her thighs, gripping her hands, and leaning back into the increasing force of the boost. Opal had coaxed her favorite cuddler, Michael T, up into the ceiling netting. They both dangled by their knees, the better to feel the acceleration. Little Ruby was holding tight to Enku and Megat's hands, while on the other side of the room, Saphir and Emerode clowned around, competing for Long Meng's attention. I was supposed to be on damage control, but I passed the safety workflow over to Bruce. When we hit maximum acceleration, Trey was clinging to me with all his strength. The kids' biomes were stacked in the corner of my eye. All their hormone graphs showed stress indicators. Trey's levels were higher than the rest, but that wasn't strange. When your hab is somersaulting behind a planet, bleeding off its orbital energy, your whole world turns into a carnival ride. Some people like it better than others. I tightened my arms around Trey's ribs, holding tight as the room turned sideways. "Everything's fine," I murmured in his ear. "Ricochet was designed for this kind of maneuver." Our safety harnesses held us tight to the wall netting. Below, Saphir and Emerald climbed up the floor, laughing and hooting. Long Mang tossed pillows at them. Trey gripped my thumb, yanking as if it were a joystick with the power to tame the room's spin. Then he shot me a live feed showing Ricochet's chief astronautics officer, a dark-skinned, silver-haired woman with protective bubbles fastened over her eyes. "Who's that?" I asked, pretending I didn't know. "Vijaya Lakshmi," Trey answered. "If anything goes wrong, she'll fix it." "Have you met her?" I knew very well he had, but asking questions is an excellent calming technique. "Yeah, lots of times." He flashed a pointer at the astronaut's mirrored eye coverings. "Is she sick?" "Might be cataracts. That's a normal age-related condition. What's worrying you?" "Nothing," he said. "Why don't you ask Long Mang about it?" Long Mang was the jewel box's physician, Ricochet raised with a facial deformity that thrust her mandible severely forward. As an adult, once bone ossification had completed, she had rejected the cosmetic surgery that could have normalized her jaw. "Not all interventions are worthwhile," she told me once. "I wouldn't feel like myself with a new face." As a pediatric specialist, Long Mang was responsible for the health and development of 20 creches. But we were her favorite. She'd decided to celebrate the boost with us. At that moment, she was dangling from the floor with Saphir and Emerald, tickling their tummies and howling with laughter. I tried to mitigate Trey's distress with good old-fashioned cuddle and chat. I showed him feeds from the biodiversity preserve, where the netted megafauna floated in midair, riding out the boost in safety, legs dangling. One big cat groomed itself as it floated, licking one huge paw and wiping down its whiskers with an air of unconcern. Once the boost was complete and we were back to our normal gravity regime, Trey's indicators quickly normalized. The kids ran up to the garden to check out the damage. I followed slowly, leaning on my cane. One of the bots had malfunctioned and lost stability, destroying several rows of terraced seating in the open-air auditorium just next to our patch. The kids all thought that was pretty funny. Trey seemed perfectly fine, but I couldn't shake the feeling that I'd failed him somehow. The jewel box didn't visit Mars. Martian habs are popular, their excursion contracts highly priced. The kids put in a few bids, but didn't have the credits to win. "Next boost," I told them. "Venus in 4 years, then Earth." I didn't mention Luna. I'd done my best to forget it even existed. Easy to do. Ricochet has almost no social or trade ties with Earth's moon. Our main economic sector is human reproduction and development, artificial wombs, zygote husbandry, natal decanting. Every bit of art and science that turns a mass of undifferentiated cells into a healthy young adult. Luna's creche system collapsed completely not long after I left. Serves them right. I'm a centenarian, facing my last decade or two. I may look serene and wise, but I've never gotten over being the butt of my old friends' jokes. Maybe I've always been immature. It would explain a lot. 4 years passed with the usual small dramas. The jewel box grew in body and mind, stretching into young adults of 16. All six, Diamant, Emerald, Trezor, Opal, Saphir, and Ruby, hit their benchmarks erratically and inconsistently, which made me proud. Kids are supposed to be odd little individuals. We're not raising robots, after all. As Ricochet approached, the Venusian Habs began peppering us with proposals. Recreation opportunities, educational seminars, sightseeing trips, arts festivals, sporting tournaments, all on reasonable trade terms. Venus wanted us to visit, fall in love, stay. They'd been losing population to Mars for years. The brain drain was getting critical. The Jewel Box decided to bid on a 3-day excursion. Sightseeing with a focus on natural geology, including active volcanism. For the first time in their lives, they'd experience real, unaugmented planetary gravity instead of Ricochet's 1.0 cobbled together by centripetal force and a Stefoff field. While the kids were lounging around the rumpus room, arguing over how many credits to sink into the bid, Long Meng pinged me. "You and I should send a proposal to the Venusian creches," she whispered. "A masterclass or something. Something so tasty they can't resist." "Why? Are you trying to pad your billable hours?" She gave me a toothy grin. "I want a vacation. Wouldn't it be fun to get Venus to fund it?" Long Meng and I had collaborated before when our numbers had come up for board positions on the Creche Governance Authority. 9 miserable months co-authoring policy memos, revising the Creche Management Best Practices Guide, and presenting at skills development seminars. All on top of our regular responsibilities. Against the odds, our friendship survived the bureaucracy. We spent a few hours cooking up a seminar to tempt the on-planet Creche specialists and fired it off to a bunch of Venusian booking agents. We called it Attachment and Self-Regulation in Theory and Practice, Approaches to Promoting Emotional Independence in the Creche-Raised Child. Sound dry? Not a bit. The Venusians gobbled it up. I shot the finalized syllabus to our chosen booking agent, then escorted the Jewel Box to their open-air climbing lab. I turned them over to their instructor and settled onto my usual bench under a tall oak. Dia Ma took the lead position up the cliff as usual. By the time they'd completed the first pitch, all 3 seminars were filled. "The agent is asking for more sessions," I whispered to Long Meng. "What do you think?" "No way." Long Meng's voice rang out, startling me. As I pinged her location, her lanky form appeared in the distant aspen grove. "This is a vacation," she shouted. "If I wanted to pack my billable hours, I'd volunteer for another board position." I shuddered. "Agreed." She jogged over and climbed onto the bench beside me, sitting on the backrest with her feet on the seat. "Plus, you haven't been off this rock in 20 years," she added, plucking a leaf from the overhead bough. I said okay, Long Meng. We watched the kids as they moved with confidence and ease over the gleaming, pyrite-inflected cliff face. Big, bulky Diamant didn't look like a climber, but was obsessed with the sport. The other 5 had gradually been infected by their creche mate's passion. Long Meng and I waved to the kids as they settled in for a rest mid-route. Then she turned to me. "What do you want to see on planet? Have you made a wish list yet?" "I've been to Venus. It's not that special." She laughed, a great, good-natured, wide-mouthed guffaw. "Nothing can compare to Luna, can it, Jules?" "Don't say that word." "Luna? Okay. What's better than Venus? Earth?" "Earth doesn't smell right." "The Soul Belt?" "Never been there." "What then?" "This is nice." I waved at the groves of trees surrounding the cliff. Overhead, the plasma core that formed the backbone of our hab was just shifting its visible spectrum into twilight. Mellow light filtered through the leaves. Teenage laughter echoed off the cliff, and in the distance, the steady, droning wail of a fussy newborn. I pulled up the surrounding camera feeds and located the newborn. A tired-looking cuddler carried the baby in an over-shoulder sling, patting its bottom rhythmically as they strolled down a sunflower-lined path. I pinged the baby's biome. 3 weeks old. Chronic gas and reflux unresponsive to every intervention strategy. Nothing to do but wait for the child to grow out of it. The kids summited, waved to us, then began rappelling back down. Long Meng and I met them at the base. "Em, how's your finger?" Long Meng asked. "Good." Amarod bounced off the last ledge and slipped to the ground, wave of pink hair flapping. "Better than good." "Let's see, then." Amarod unclipped and offered the doctor their hand. They were a kid with only two modes, all out or flatline. A few months back, they'd injured themselves cranking on a crimp, completely bowstringing the flexor tendon. Long Meng launched into an explanation of annular pulley repair strategies and recovery times. I tried to listen, but I was tired. My hips ached. My back ached. My limbs rotated on joints gritty with age. In truth, I didn't want to go to Venus. The kids had won their bid, and with them off hab, staying home would have been a good rest. But Long Meng's friendship was important, and making her happy was worth a little effort. Long Meng and I accompanied the jewel box down Venus's umbilical, through the high sulfuric acid clouds to the elevator's base deep in the planet's mantle. When we entered the busy central transit hub, with its domed ceiling and slick, speedy slideways, the kids began making faces. "This place stinks," said Diamant. "Yeah, smells like piss," said Ruby. Trey looked worried. "Do they have diseases here or something?" Opal slapped her hand over her mouth. "I'm going to be sick. Is it the smell or the gravity?" A quick glance at Opal's biome showed she was perfectly fine. All six kids were. Time for a classic creche manager-style social intervention. "If you can't be polite around the locals," I whispered, knocking my cane on the ground for emphasis, "I'll shoot you right back up the elevator." "If you send us home, do we get our credits back?" Amarod asked, yawning. "No, you'd be penalized for non-completion of contract." I posted a leaderboard for good behavior. Then I told them Venusians were especially gossipy, and if word got out that they'd badmouthed the planet, they'd get nothing but dirty looks for the whole trip. A bald lie. Venus is no more gossipy than most Habs, but it nurses a significant anti-creche prejudice. Not as extreme as Luna, but still. Ricochet kids were used to being loved by everyone. On Venus, they would get attitude just for existing. I wanted to offer a convenient explanation for the chilly reception from the locals. The group of us rode the slideway to Vunivara Portway, where Enku, Megat, and Bruce were waiting. Under the towering archway, I hugged and kissed the kids, told them to have lots of fun, and waved at their retreating backs. Then Long Meng and I were on our own. She took my arm and steered us into Vunivara's Passeggiata, a social stroll that wound through the hab like a pedestrian river. We drifted with the flow, joining the people-watching crowd, seeing and being seen. The hab had spectacular sculpture gardens and fountains, and Venus's 0.9 odd gravity was a relief on my knees and hips, but the kids weren't wrong about the stench. Vunivara smelled like oily vinaigrette over half-rotted lettuce leaves, with an animal undercurrent reminiscent of hormonal teenagers on a cleanliness strike. As we walked, the stench surged and faded, then resurfaced again. We ducked into a kiosk where a lone chef roasted kebabs over an open flame. We sat at the counter, drinking sparkling wine and watching her prepare meal packages for bot delivery. "What's wrong with the air scrubbers here?" Long Meng asked the chef. "Unstable population," she answered. "We don't have enough civil engineers to handle the optimization workload." "If you know any nuts and bolts types, tell them to come to Vunivara. The bank will kiss them all over." She served us grilled protein on discs of crispy starch, topped with charred vegetable and heaped with garlicky sauce, followed by finger-sized blossoms with tender, fleshy petals over a crisp honeycomb core. When we rejoined the throng, we shot the chef a pair of big, bright public valentines on slow decay, visible to everyone passing by. The chef ran after us with two tulip-shaped bulbs of Amaro. "Enjoy your stay," she said, handing us the bulbs. "We're developing a terrific fresh food culture here, You'll love it. In response to the population downswing, Venus's Habs had started accepting all kinds of marginal business proposals. Artists, innovators, experimenters. Lose a ventilation engineer, gain a chef. Lose a surgeon, gain a puppeteer. With the chefs and puppeteers come all the people who want to live in a Hab with chefs and puppeteers and are willing to put up with a little stench to get it. Eventually, the Hab's fortunes turn around. Population starts flowing back, attracted by the burgeoning quality of life. Engineers and surgeons return, and the chefs and puppeteers move on to the next proposal-friendly Hab. Basic human dynamics. Long Meng sucked the last drop of Amaro from her bulb and then tossed it into a disposal bot. First night of vacation. She gave me a wicked grin. Want to get drunk? When I rolled out of my sleep stack in the morning, I was puffy and stiff. My hair stood in untamable clumps. The pouches under my eyes shone an alarming purple, and my wrinkle inventory had doubled. My tongue tasted like garlic sauce. But as long as nobody else could smell it, I wasn't too concerned. As for the rest, I'd earned every age marker. When Long Meng finally cracked her stack, she was pressed and perky, wrapped in a crisp fuchsia robe. A filmy teal scarf drifted under her thrusting jawline. "Let's teach these Venusians how to raise kids," she said. In response to demand, the booking agency had upgraded us to a larger auditorium. The moment we hit the stage, I forgot all my aches and pains. Dr. Footlights, they call it. Performing in front of 2,000 strangers produces a lot of adrenaline. We were a good pair. Long Meng, dynamic and engaging, lunging around the stage like a born performer. Me? I was her foil. A grave, wide oldster with 50 years of creche work under my belt. Much of our seminar was inspirational. Creche work is relentless no matter where you practice it, and on Venus it brings negative social status. A little cheerleading goes a long way. We slotted our specialty content in throughout the program, introducing the concepts in the introductory material, building audience confidence by reinforcing what they already knew, then hit them between the eyes with the latest developments in Ricochet's proprietary cognitive theory and emotional development modeling. We blew their minds, then backed away from the hard stuff and returned to cheerleading. "What's the worst part of creche work, Jules?" Long Meng asked as our program concluded, her scarf waving in the citrus-scented breeze from the ventilation. "There are no bad parts," I said dryly. "Each and every day is unmitigated joy." The audience laughed harder than the joke deserved. I waited for the noise to die down and mined the silence for a few lingering moments before continuing. Our children venture out of the creche as young adults, ready to form new emotional ties wherever they go. The future is in their hands, an unending medium for them to shape with their ambition and passion. Our creche work lifts them up and holds them high all their lives. That's the best part. I held my cane to my heart with both hands. "The worst part is," I said, "if we do our jobs right, those kids leave the creche and never think about us again." We left them with a tear in every eye. The audience ran back to their creches, knowing they were doing the most important work in the universe, and open to the possibility of doing it even better. After our second seminar, on a recommendation from the kebab chef, we blew our credits in a restaurant high up in Vannevara's atrium. Live food raised, prepared, and served by hand. Nothing extruded or bulbed. And no bots, except for the occasional hygiene sweeper. Long Meng cut into a lobster carapace with a pair of hand shears. "Have you ever noticed how intently people listen to you?" "Most of the time, the kids just pretend to listen." "Not kids, adults." She served me a morsel of claw meat, perfectly molded by the creature's shell. I dredged it in green sauce and popped it in my mouth. Sweet peppers buzzed my sinuses. "You're a great leader, Jules." At my age, I should be. I've had lots of practice telling people what to do. Exactly, she said through a mouthful of lobster. So what are you going to do when the jewel box leaves the creche? I lifted my flute of pale green wine and leaned back, gazing through the window at my elbow into the depths of the atrium. I'd been expecting this question for a few years, but didn't expect it from Long Meng. How could someone so young understand the sorrows of the old? If you don't want to talk about it, I'll shut up, she added quickly. But I have some ideas. Do you want to hear them? On the atrium floor far below, groups of pedestrians were just smudges, no individuals distinguishable at all. I turned back to the table, but kept my eyes on my food. Okay, go ahead. A HAB consortium is soliciting proposals to rebuild their failed creche system, she said, voice eager. I want to recruit a team. You'd be project advisor, top position, big picture stuff. I'll be project lead and do all the grunt work. Let me guess, I said. It's Luna. Long Meng nodded. I kept a close eye on my blood pressure indicators. Deep breaths and a sip of water kept the numbers out of the red zone. I suppose you'd want me to liaise with Luna's civic apparatus, too. I kept my voice flat. That would be ideal. She slapped the table with both palms and grinned. With a native Lunite at the helm, we'd win for sure. Long Meng was so busy bubbling with ideas and ambition as she told me her plans, she didn't notice my fierce scowl. She probably didn't even taste her luxurious meal. As for me, I enjoyed every bite, right down to the last crumb of my flaky cardamom chocolate dessert. Then I pushed back my chair and grabbed my cane. There's only one problem, Long Meng, I said. Luna doesn't deserve creches. Deserve doesn't really... I cut her off. Luna doesn't deserve a population. She looked confused. But it has a population, so... Luna deserves to die, I snapped. I stumped away, leaving her at the table, her jaw hanging in shock. Halfway through our third and final seminar, in the middle of introducing Ricochet's proprietary never-fail methods for raising kids, I got an emergency ping from Bruce. Trey's abandoned the tour. He's run off. I faked a coughing fit and lunged toward the water bulbs at the back of the stage. Turned my back on 2,000 pairs of eyes and tried to collect myself as I scanned Trey's biome. His stress indicators were highly elevated. The other five members of the jewel box were anxious, too. Do you have eyes on him? Of course. Bruce shot me a bookmark. Three separate cameras showed Trey was alone, playing his favorite pattern-matching game while coasting along a nearly deserted slideway. Metadata indicated his location on an express connector between Coacalco and Eaton Habs. He looked stunned, as if surprised by his own daring. Small, under the high arches of the slideway tunnel. And thin, his bony shoulder blades tented the light cloth of his tunic. Coacalco has a bot shadowing him. Do we want them to intercept? I zoomed in on Trey's face, as if I could read his thoughts as easily as his physiology. He'd never been particularly assertive or self-willed, never one to challenge his creche mates or lead them in new directions. But kids will surprise you. Tell them to stay back. Ping a personal security firm to monitor him. Go on with your tour and try not to worry. Are you sure? I wasn't sure. Not at all. My stress indicators were circling the planet. Every primal urge screamed for the bot to wrap itself around the boy and haul him back to Bruce. But I wasn't going to slap down a 16-year-old kid for acting on his own initiative, especially since this was practically the first time he'd shown any. Looks like Trey has something to do, I whispered. Let's follow him through. I returned to my chair, tried to focus on the curriculum, but couldn't concentrate. Long Meng could only do so much to fill the gap. The audience became restless, shifting in their seats, murmuring to each other. Many stopped paying attention. Right up in the front row, three golden-haired, rainbow-smocked Venusians were blanked out, completely immersed in their feeds. Longmeng was getting frantic, trying to distract 2,000 people from the gaping hole on the stage that was her friend Jules. I picked up my cane, stood, and calmly tipped my chair. It hit the stage floor with a crash. Longmeng jumped. Every head swiveled. "I apologize for the dramatics," I said. "But earlier, you all noticed me blanking out. I want to explain." I limped to the front of the stage, unsteady despite my cane. I wear a stability belt, but try not to rely on it too much. Old age has exacerbated my natural tendency for a weak core, and using the belt too much just makes me frailer. But my legs wouldn't stop shaking. I dialed up the balance support. "What just happened illustrates an important point about creche work." I attached my cane's cling point to the stage floor and leaned on it with both hands as I scanned the audience. "Our mistakes can ruin lives. No other profession carries such a vast potential for screwing up." "That's not true." Long Meng's eyes glinted in the stage lights, clearly relieved I'd stepped back up to the job. "Engineering disciplines carry quite the disaster potential. Surgery certainly does. Psychology and pharmacology. Applied astrophysics. I could go on." She grinned. "Really, Jules, nearly every profession is dangerous." I grimaced and dismissed her point. "Doctors' decisions are supported by ethics panels and case reviews. Engineers run simulation models and have their work vetted by peers before taking any real-world risks. But in a creche, we make 100 decisions a day that affect human development, sometimes 100 an hour." "Okay, but are every last one of those decisions so important?" I gestured to one of the rainbow-clad front row Venusians. "What do you think? Are your decisions important?" A camera bug zipped down to capture her answer for the seminar's shared feed. The Venusian licked her lips nervously and shifted to the edge of her seat. "Some decisions are," she said in a high, tentative voice. "You can never know which." "That's right. You never know." I thanked her and rejoined Long Meng in the middle of the stage. "Creche workers take on huge responsibility. We assume all the risk with zero certainty. No other profession accepts those terms. So why do we do this job?" "Someone has to," said Long Meng. Laughter percolated across the auditorium. "Why us, though?" I said. "What's wrong with us?" More laughs. I wrapped my cane on the floor. "My current creche is a 16-year-old Sixum. Well-integrated, good morale. Distressingly sporty. They keep me running." The audience chuckled. "They're on a geography tour somewhere on the other side of Venus. A few minutes ago, one of my kids ran off. Right now, he's coasting down one of your intrahab slideways and blocking our pings." Silence. I'd captured every eye. All their attention was mine. I fired the public slideway feed onto the stage. Trey's figure loomed 4 meters high. His foot was kicked back against the slideway's bumper in an attitude of nonchalance, but it was just a pose. His gaze was wide and unblinking, the whites of his eyes fully visible. "Did he run away because of something one of us said? Or did? Or neglected to do? Did it happen today, yesterday, or 10 days ago? Maybe it has nothing to do with us at all, but some private urge from the kid's own heart. He might be suffering acutely right now, or maybe he's enjoying the excitement. The adrenaline and cortisol footprints look the same." I clenched my gnarled, age-spotted hand to my chest, pulling at the fabric of my shirt. "But I'm suffering. My heart feels like it could rip right out of my chest because this child has put himself in danger." I patted the wrinkled fabric back into place. Mild danger. Venus is no Luna. Nervous laughter from the crowd. Long Meng hovered at my side. Creche work is like no other human endeavor, I said. Nothing else offers such potential for failure, sorrow, and loss. But no work is as important. You all know that, or you wouldn't be here. Long Meng squeezed my shoulder. I patted her hand. Raising children is only for true believers.